Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, Alistair. Yes, Andy. Oh, well, I've appeared on a couple of episodes that do go on. Oh, no, your
thing doesn't work, because in that you say, oh, Alistair, that means you're me,
yeah,
in that
okay.
one. And I haven't appeared on any do go ons.
I'm not saying that I'm you. I'm saying Alistair, and I'm talking to myself. I'm just using your format. So,
what about when you said, yes, Andy? Was that you talking to yourself as
no,
well?
I
Is
was
this
saying,
the duality
know,
of man?
I was saying, no, I know, Andy, that you want to step in and correct what I'm doing.
Ow. No, Andy.
It was more of a, yes, Andy, like that, even though, you know, I said it in a more different way that doesn't sound like that. Anyway, I've appeared on two episodes of Blocktober as part of Do Go On. I appeared on the Tunguska event, which is one that I wrote, you know, but based on real events. and then when Jess/Bob got hit by a car, I got to appear on the Men in Black episode to fill in her very comfortable shoes.
Oh, she got knocked right out of her shoes, did she? It was one of those classic cartoon style hit by a car.
I think that happens in real life. I think that happens in real life. People lose
their
shoes.
People get knocked out of their shoes.
That'd be a great way to take off your shoes at the end of the day.
Let's start the episode, Alistair. Let's start the episode.
Well, okay.
Hello and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas. I'm Andy.
And I'm Alistair Georgie William Trumbull Birchall.
And it almost sounded like you were going for a Borchel at the end there.
Yeah, a Borchel.
Borchel.
A Borchel.
Trombley Arboreal.
Borchel.
Alistair.
So
that's I mean, what a beautiful idea. What a great start to the episode. It's this thing, but you can get it for your house. It's basically the front of a car
on a big
sort of arm, I guess. I imagine it swings like a child's swing would swing, right? But in such a way that it can hit you at ground level like an oncoming vehicle. And it'll knock you right out of your shoes. Now, I mean, I almost think it would be good if it could also then knock you straight into bed.
Well, I know, I like the idea that you do it while you're looking at your phone. Right? You just press a button next to it, you're looking at your phone, and it knocks you, and you genuinely like flip up into the air and land on the hood.
Bounce off the hood and land on the ground. But your shoes are off now. Now your shoes are off.
Yeah, but now your shoes are off.
I mean, I feel like I need this, not, you know, in a way to get my kids to take off their shoes when they come into the house.
Yeah.
If there was a way, if someone could develop this, you know, like we were able to selectively breed members of the nightshade family so that they were no longer poisonous, but we could get tomatoes and potatoes out of them that are, in fact, deliciously edible, right? If someone were able to, I don't know, selectively breed cars in such that you can be hit with them but not get injured,
sure. Yeah.
Then I'd love to use that technology. And again, just to be 100% clear, I don't want to hurt my children in any way.
No.
I want to take their shoes off. I want to use the ability of cars to knock people's shoes off.
Absolutely.
To get my children's shoes off in a safe way.
Well, there's no reason why the car needs to be made entirely out of hard metal.
I don't know. It might need to be for this to work. But what I'm saying is that the evolutionary process...
Yeah. I think you need to still violently be thrown into the air.
Sure.
But it's again, like, you know, it's like boxers sparring with gloves and a helmet on, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
It's a gym car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a sparring car.
Yeah, you know, and why not use a sparring car as well? It's a martial art that just prepares you for fighting a car.
Spar car. Oh, it's a really good idea. Man versus car. You know what? I would love to see this as an alternative to bullfighting, which has always seemed inhumane.
I think like this a lot.
A sport. This is perfect. Played in a sort of a matador style arena. It's man versus car. It's got everything.
It really does have absolutely everything. I mean, I can't believe that this doesn't exist.
It's a demolition derby.
Yeah.
But
you're like the person driving is having so much fun trying to hit this person with the car.
Then we could honestly say that they want to be there. No, he's having a good time. He likes this. And then there's a person standing there, and they've got, I guess, a spear and maybe a spanner. I don't know, a spanner on the end of a stick. Maybe as the car zips past, they try and undo some of the nuts on the wheels.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they're very good.
Yeah. So they sometimes jump on top of the car and they start slapping the person in the car. Do you think?
I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to hurt the person in the car because then I think it's just you versus the car. That's the purity. Right.
I guess that would be like the equivalent of going in and sort of trying to get on top of the bull and stick your fingers in its ears and try to poke its brain. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to touch the bull's brain. You can only stab it in the heart, which I suppose is the engine.
This
a lot.
What were we talking about before the podcast? Something about pulling your balls out. Oh, this is our... I don't know if I need to bring this up again now.
Yeah.
This is our double Oedipal scenario in which Oedipus. It's Eric Clapton is Oedipus. Eric Clapton, who's he discovered that his sister was his mother at some point in his life. He thought she was his sister, but it was actually his mum. And in this Oedipus scenario, he's also discovered that he was having sex with his sister, who he then discovers is his mum.
Yeah. So,
and
I guess he was separated from his sister at some point.
Yes.
And so after making out with her or having sex with her, he finds out that it's his sister, and he goes, "No!" Yes.
Yeah.
So he pulls out his eyes.
Yes.
And so then it's revealed by his grandmother, who he thought was his mother, that actually his sister was his real mom. And so then he needs to pull out a second set of round shaped things on his body.
So he pulls out his balls, his testicles. Yeah. Now, the problem with this,
I've only just realized
the problem with this, is that I can't imagine a scenario in which you're making out with somebody and it's revealed to you that they're your sister, right? So the people who know that they're your sister must also know that it's your mum.
Well, that's what I thought at first.
If you've been estranged from this person, why would they reveal to you that they're your sister if they know that they're your mum?
Well, I felt this at the beginning as well. But you got to remember that
that's a natural thing. Everybody goes through that feeling.
Everybody goes through this, Andy.
What?
I used to be like you. But I have grown. With my 10-step plan...
Yes.
You see, they probably do this kind of situation because of societal pressures to hide the fact that a young woman is having a baby. And so they would have hidden it from people within the community.
So maybe
the mailman tells him that it's his sister because he knows.
He knows
that it's his sister because that's what he had always been told. I suppose while they were hiding that the young girl was pregnant by hiding her belly, they were probably adding cushions to the grandma's belly.
Yes.
To make her seem like she was getting super pregnant.
Yeah.
They're probably adding shoulder pads or something like that to the daughter, the young daughter who's pregnant.
To make it all proportional.
Yeah, hyper proportional.
Yes.
Making her arms thicker, you know, giving her sort of putting in saddlebags on her legs and stuff like that.
Doing that sort of optical illusion stuff that they did with the Lord of the Rings to make Gandalf
that's right.
look bigger than the hobbits.
Yeah, and they were doing a lot like...
Building weird-shaped tables.
Yeah, and sort of making, like they were doing with Cece in The Nanny, and they were just, a lot of the time, just standing her behind a, you know, a bookshelf or something like that.
Behind a bookshelf?
Yeah. The family ran a mobile library, but it was just a library.
That explains that story arc for that season. The mobile library.
Yeah, and so there was just a library on like a little like a bookshelf on a trolley.
Mm, it wasn't very mobile. It wasn't hyper mobile. It could just move around the room. It was a housebound library. It's a limited mobility library. It's a library.
It was a library.
It's a mobile
it was a bookshelf
library.
On crutches.
Yeah. It could hobble. Yeah. It could hobble. It's not fully mobile.
I wonder if you could hang a bookshelf on some crutches just at the top. Like you put a little hinge.
Yeah.
Like that at the top, right? Between the two crutches. And then you move the crutches forward. And then the library swings.
Yeah.
The bookshelf swings. And then it lands back there. And then you move the things forward. God, it'd be hard being the person having to move it.
Look, and the lurching would probably dislodge some of the books. I'm not saying this would be better than wheels, but Alistair, I think it is feasible in the system you've described. I think that would work to allow you to have a bookshelf that could hobble.
Yeah, I'm limited mobility.
This was such a great idea. Riffing on that beloved and well-known concept of a mobile library, taking the idea and then making it not a very mobile library, one that's just in for a house.
You've heard of a mobile library. This is a limited mobility library. All right, everybody.
It's done. A very simple concept to explain.
Here come the jokes.
Very easy.
Here come the jokes about having limited mobility. Sort of about being sort of a little bit physically disabled.
Right. Yeah, okay. So sure, the setup is a little clunky. Sure, not everybody's aware of the concept. But once you get into the meat of it, it's very problematic. So it's worth it. It's worth it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe this is the way that we finally regain the ability to make jokes about limited mobility.
Exactly.
The thing that made it probo was that it was about people with limited mobility. But
that's right.
What about objects with limited mobility?
A lot of the time, they have no humanity. A lot of the time,
as far as we're aware, yes.
The way of educating people, well, the way of kind of being able to push things forward is through books, and this bit has a lot of books in it.
And it has a lot of pushing forward as well.
Pushing forward. Before, when you were talking about getting your kids' shoes off, right? I find anybody who cares about taking shoes off before they get in the house, I find that completely insane, right?
Do it at our place.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was trying to call you.
That's why I was bringing
insane.
It up.
Yeah, yeah. Good. I mean, of course, you live in a mud pit, and so I like, you know, so I can understand there's a little bit more reason, but you know, it feels like it's crazy to just to resist the inside of your house becoming a mud pit. It feels like an endless battle that you will never win, but that's
it
fine.
Feels like the logical thing to do would be just to make some kind of mud floored house.
That's right. But I was thinking that maybe there's a middle ground that you could find, which is shoes. You know, some people have house shoes, but what about house shoes that you can put your whole shoe into?
House shoes for your shoes, shoes for your shoes.
You know what
shoe
I mean?
Shoes.
So that way you never have to take off your shoes. Right? And it's for people who, you know, and this could be for, you know, cultures where they are more inclined to take off their shoes, but then they have white people come over to their house that don't take off their shoes usually and are not used to it. Well, then they could have shoes for them so that they could keep their shoes on.
Can I put this out there?
Yeah.
What if the shoe looks like a foot?
I think that's like great. It looks like a socked foot.
Like a fleshy, unsocked, exposed foot.
And then you could have socks for that foot that you put on in case their unsocked foot gets cold.
This is a really good thing to have for people who have friends from Asian cultures.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they're on really good terms. They visit these people's houses a lot, but they're unwilling to make any concessions to their culture.
Yeah.
And that feels to me like possibly the way forward. Australia, as a country, we've proven recently in no uncertain terms that we are not willing to make any effort to be a fully accepting multicultural nation. Maybe this is a problem we could solve with technology instead of with progressing personally, instead of with any personal growth.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. Because
I really like this idea, Alistair. Yeah, house feet.
I love house feet a lot, yeah.
And I love that it's a thing that the people from those cultures are going to have to go out of their way to get these things, keep them at the door, you know, keep them clean, that sort of thing,
yeah,
to accommodate our unwillingness.
And of course, they will be completely white skinned feet because that's exactly who they are for. You know, but I think that they will look nice.
This might be the best idea we've ever had.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, one time when I was listening back through episodes looking for ideas, I did like on this exact same topic when a joke that you made about when we were talking about people who have a little sign that says, you know, we in this house we take off our shoes or something like that.
Mm.
And then you were suggesting putting a little sign on your feet that suggests, well, in these feet we keep our shoes on or whatever. I'm sorry, I also have a sign.
I guess they cancel each other out.
Yeah.
It's who's to say which sign is correct? Signs in mathematics, mathematical signs, Alistair, this is going to be very good.
Yeah.
You're going to want to listen to this because we also use the word sign to describe.
The movie Signs, but it's about,
Alistair,
mathematical operators that come to Earth.
That's a good idea, though.
As they look out the window, you know, they're watching the news and they see that video from a birthday party, right? And they're like,
I haven't seen the movie.
You haven't seen the movie Signs? Crazy. No. What a cultural touchstone that has gone untouched by the Andes' tender, beautiful hands. I touched the movie Signs. With my hands, and then it's a division sign that what goes past, and everybody goes.
Those would be the ones you don't want, right? The division and the the subtraction sign, the devil's addition.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Would both be the most threatening of the mathematical signs?
What do you think would happen to you if they touched you? Do you think you would split? Like, you know, do you think that what they represent would happen to you?
I think it would have to, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that this is like, this is what I was going to suggest, is like, what if we could make real life versions of the mathematical sides, the mathematical operators, a plus, but in real life, right? Like a real one, not just maths anymore, but make a real one in the real world.
Yeah, so if a plus touched you, then it would just create another one of you?
I think that would be a multiply or something. I mean, well, you know, that would have to
be... But that's the thing,
is that the multiplier
is just
by themselves, the operators don't really do anything.
No,
they need
to... A multiplier is just a plus, like through... It's essentially a plus algorithm.
Yeah, sort of, but I don't think you're thinking about it properly. And I can't be bothered to explain why.
Andy, just fix it. Just you tell me what you think.
Well, I think I was trying to, Alistair, but you were talking over the top of me and I lost interest. But, Alistair.
I never had the interest.
No, I think you were talking under the bottom of me, really. Right. Under the bottom. I wasn't talking over the top of you. You were talking under the bottom of me, Alistair. But I'm suggesting that... the mathematical operators would need to, because they work to combine numbers. right?
Yeah.
They cause them to interact, you know, mathematical terms in equations, that sort of interact via the operators.
Yeah.
So you would need...
Two things,
exactly.
But would it work through touching?
So like if it was a plus sign, it would cause people to have a baby, I guess? Me plus you, or cause us to combine together. That's right. If it was me plus you, right... If we both touched a plus sign,
yeah.
then you and I would fuse together into one monster.
What about how it's touching the air when it's not touching something else? And it's touching all the microbes in the air and stuff like that. Would you get that the fly situation?
I mean it depends on how the rules of this work, and I think we'd need to talk to a mathematician scientist, a maths biologist, to truly get to the bottom of it.
A real mathematical operator mathematician slash biologist you know, would it start to combine you with every single atom that touched it?
Exactly. And I guess if they'd also have to be a physicist.
And also, what would happen to, let's say, the subatomic particles that touched it were in two spots at once.
Alistair, this is what I want. I want a podcast that is this, right?
Andy, it's called Two in the Think Tank.
But I think, I want this crossed with the pop test. Like, I want us to be able to go back and redo the pop test, right? But now we only ask these kinds of questions to scientists who come on.
Yeah.
So we'll get on a biologist and a mathematician and a physicist, and we'll say, we want an answer to this question. If there were mathematical operators in the real world, would they work on just people, or would they combine you with everything that they touch? I want to know.
Yeah, we get
this is a great horror movie, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and it would work. It would be great for, you know, for a character who hated maths in the first place. And then in order to beat these things, would have to suddenly grasp maths.
Grasp it by the neck and choke it to death.
That's right. Hopefully while it's not touching anything else. He'd have to do it in a vacuum.
This would be great. And then at the end, after this has happened, right, after they've defeated mathematics, then we end up in that universe where there's no maths that we were talking about in Sci-Fi Try Guys, that we come out the other side having defeated maths in the real world,
and then
maths doesn't exist anymore.
No.
Now you can no longer add anything together, and it's a kind of dystopia.
But you know what would be You know what would be crazy though, Andy? If the minus operator, if it touched you and another person and it removed
the differences between you. No, all that would be left would be the differences.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
just like a little bit of nose and...
Yeah. That would be crazy because I guess most of your DNA is identical except for some bits.
Mm.
But then... almost all of your skin. Oh man, I guess yeah. It removes what atom by atom, it cancels you out.
I mean, this is why we need to talk to a biologist. This is why we need to talk to a biologist.
How would it work? Would it work atom by atom, or would it work attribute by attribute?
This is so good. We get them on and we make them tell us how it would work. Ask them these horrible questions. No, but how would it work? Seriously. What would it do? You're the scientist. You tell me.
This is like when somebody, every time like something's wrong with my car and somebody goes, didn't you study engineering? And you go, yeah. We learned all about how to fix this particular kind of car. And
Do people say that to you? Nobody says that to
me. You know, it's like, although yesterday I did, you know, because I got my bike out from the shop, getting it fixed while I'm, you know, I guess as this is being released, I'm probably currently on this 2-week bike ride that is going to kill my ass. Is going to murder my ass. I got the bike out, and then I went on for a big 2-hour ride the next day, and then a thing broke again, and I was like, oh Jesus Christ, this is going to be bad. But then, and so I was like, going to have to bring it back. And then I was like, oh, I better just try and look up how to fix this thing. And it's like the front derailleur. And trying to figure, and then I was like, I watched a few videos, and I realized that if you watch videos like that, you don't really get what's happening. You watch them about 3 or 4 times. Suddenly you do understand things. It just takes, it takes a bunch of time for your mind to just get around all of the concepts.
Yeah. Yeah. You realized that, did you?
Yes. I mean, I've realized it, but I mean, the thing is that it does, because you could be, you know, it wouldn't be insane for you to watch something and then go, I can't understand this, and take the meaning of the word can't as I'm never going to be able to, right?
Mm.
I don't know.
Like I do with learning new physical skills.
Exactly. And in many ways, everything is a physical skill, since that we are made of matter, right? And so...
Yeah. You're a materialist.
I'm a materialist, I like it. Right? And so anyway, I've watched this thing over and over again, and then I went, okay, I think I understand the concept. And then I tried to fix it, and then I realized I had it completely the opposite way. And so then I tried to fix it again, and then I fixed it.
Was that satisfying?
I mean, of course it was satisfying. It's one of the few things that brings true joy in your life, is learning and fixing something and it working, and then being like, I have progressed as a person.
It's amazing how little we do it.
I know. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I'm constantly...
experiencing satisfaction.
Well, I know, but then in order to do it, you've also got to put yourself in a situation where you are in trouble.
Sure.
You know,
but I guess you could solve problems for other people.
That's true. That's true. But I told you, Andy, I'm not going to start helping people until I'm absolutely sure that a huge success and fame are not the solution. You know, I have to experience the, you know, like everyone, I'm not going to just let other people tell me, well, I got huge success and fame, and then that didn't bring me joy.
Yeah, well, it didn't bring you joy.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's right. Yeah. But let us all get you know, discover that for ourselves. Mm. Anyway, I've taken us way away from the thing.
No. This is all good stuff, Alistair.
Yeah, yeah.
I have two things I want to say to you.
Yes.
Okay? One, I think I pitched something on the 400th episode, which was about photos, before and after photos, with people standing next to a big pair of pants, right? Holding a big pair of pants that they don't fit into anymore.
Yeah, that's really great.
Right? It is great. I haven't told you the funny bit yet, but it is great.
No, but I do love that. I was just thinking about it. I was like, I should go buy some giant pants and take some photos.
Yeah. And then the other, but this one, because on that one I was like, this is a before and after I took, you know, Jimmy McNulty's 8-month pants widening course, right? They teach you how to widen your pants.
Yeah.
Right. But this one, I was thinking you could just do the same thing, but this time it's like this, because, you know, you'd be like before and after, and it says 6 months later or whatever,
yeah.
Right? This is, and this might not be anything, but it's like, this is, these are photos of me. This is from the time it took me 6 months to take off my pants.
Wait. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. I get that now. Sorry, yeah. I do like that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know if it needs any more information.
Yeah. This is from that time. It took me 6. And you'd think that big pants like that would actually take a lot longer,
or a lot less time to take off. Be a lot easier.
I know,
to take
off.
Yeah,
that's what I meant. A lot easier to take off. But also, in the first photo, are you just wearing the pants?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But I was also thinking I could do it. Try and do a comedy festival show in which every single joke is just trying to come up with a different punchline to pictures of people standing next to their pants.
Yeah, I mean,
do you think I could turn that into an hour?
Yeah, big pants.
Yeah, big pants photo. Oh,
yeah. Are all the photos going to be you in big pants?
Yeah, I think so.
In a different pair of big pants.
I think it's the same photo every time, and I just have to have a different punchline to it.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. And so, but then do you also only reveal the photo, then you start on a blank screen again every time?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And then...
Then you reveal the photo and then you deliver the punchline.
But it couldn't... That couldn't be the same format every time because, of course...
Comedy needs surprise.
It needs a little bit of surprise.
Yeah. I'd probably change the... maybe the cropping or the resolution of the photo some of the time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe sometimes it appears behind the audience.
And sometimes
they have to turn around awkwardly.
Oh, yeah. And sometimes it's just zoomed in on your chin and you don't see the big pants, but you know they're there somewhere.
They're implied. They're heavily implied. You can infer their existence from the chin.
Oh, maybe if you could see the reflection of the pants in your eyes, I know it'd be very difficult, but you'd have to be standing in front of a big mirror as well.
Mm.
And that's a mirror that, of course, is now too big for you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. The other thing I wanted to pitch to you... Oh, no, you go.
No, you go. No, you hit me. I was just going
to... Well, mine's a changed subject.
Because I was just picturing myself wearing a giant pair of pants, but with suspenders. But then, and I was like, oh, that'd be funny. But then I realized, I think that's just a clown's outfit.
And then that would be funny. Whoa. Yeah. Have I talked about this on the podcast before? Like, what are clowns supposed to be? Like, with that face makeup and shit? Like, what are they supposed to be? Oh, yeah. It feels like they're pretending to be something, but, like, what?
Yeah.
What are they trying to look like?
Yeah, what are clowns supposed to be? Like, it's almost like their faces are butterflies or something.
Maybe. Is that it?
Is it, like, a group of people? Like, what is the origin of... Of clown face makeup.
Yeah. Like, watch that stuff, like, the big... Are those lips, that big thing they do around the mouth? Is that lips?
Oh, is it linked to...
Is that there's somebody with, like, a really chapped...
Oh, wait,
They've
Andy,
been kissing
it,
a guy with a stubble?
Andy, is it just linked to, like, that racist thing?
Like,
minstrels.
Blackface... Minstrels? I don't think so.
Oh my god, it probably is.
What about the red nose though? That's innovation. That's its own thing.
I know, but I think making big noses does feel like a racial thing.
Oh, okay. What about the red hair? The red hair to me feels like somebody over, like the fact that they've gone with it's going to be white face paint and it's going to be red hair feels like somebody overcompensating after they were called out by someone who said that they were doing a racist thing. And they're like, no, because I didn't tell you about the red hair and the...
Yeah, the red hair, and now we're because they're making fun of like the Irish instead.
Right, yeah,
that's fine. We can shift away from.
What about those cross eyes? Those eyes that are like a little cross. That's fucked.
Look, I don't know. With that? I think that this goes back a long way. I've opened up a. I mean, look, there is a thing here on a website called blackface.com, and it says the blackfaced origins in clowning, but I'm not sure. You know, some of this stuff goes back to before, you know, Shakespearean times and all that kind of stuff. So I don't have the time to read into this. And
yeah, no, and I actually don't want you to.
Yeah,
as
that's
well.
True. Yeah, yeah. Great.
It wasn't a serious question in that way.
Yeah, yeah. But
so don't worry. Don't feel the responsibility.
But I mean, the idea that maybe we find what the... original people that they're trying to be are, and it was like just some very professional, it was like a, you know, it's like kind of in the same way that I guess regular people, you know, like, or regular people who were kind of nobles would wear a lot of like powdered white faces and big wigs. The idea that clowns actually it would just used to be a normal thing worn in accounting.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it was traditional that you would wear shoes about 10 times bigger than your regular foot size. That was just what you would.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You do.
That's just what you would do. Yeah, although I don't think accountants would have worn them 10 times regularly. It's obviously been exaggerated. And accountants probably would have only worn shoes that were like eight or nine times bigger.
Yeah, that's right. Because they weren't using them at the base 10 number system at the time.
And it wasn't supposed to be absurd. And indeed, the base 10 number system.
Mm.
The other thing that I wanted to bring up was my horror movie idea. I had this idea, right, for a horror movie in which it's one of those videotape-based horror movies, right?
Oh, yeah, great.
Somebody gets sent or discovers an old videotape, a really old VHS,
yeah,
right? And they watch it. And on this video...
Really this old.
Really old. Like... Prehistoric.
What year were they created?
I don't know. Probably. I'm going to try and guess what year VHS was invented. Are you ready?
Yeah.
1974.
Oh, I'm sorry, Andy. VHS is a standard for consumer level analog recording on tape cassettes invented in 1976. Sorry, Andy. Oh
no. Oh, God.
I apologize. Hey, Andy, when you heard VHS just then, did part of your brain just trigger and go, I haven't written that as a question yet?
No, because I know that I already have, or I already have tried to.
Son of a God.
Or I already have tried to. I'm pretty sure I did. I think it's Video Home System is what it stands for.
Yeah, okay. We're writing trivia questions as a job at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and acronyms are beautiful little seams of nuggets of potential what have you.
Yeah. Okay, so somebody finds a VHS tape, an ancient
VHS. We've really
VHS
turned ourselves
tape.
Into acronymphomaniacs. Alistair, yeah, they find an ancient tape, they put it in, and they dust off the VHS player, they put it in, they watch this tape, and on this tape is a horrible murder, right, taking place. And then they see the face of the murderer turning and looking at the camera with this horrible smile, and it's them doing the murder.
What?
Right? That's all I have so far. But like, in terms of like a sort of a fucked up thing to see that you would not like witnessing, and that opens the mind to terrifying possibilities, I think that's something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I do like that. And so how do we turn it into a comedy sketch, I reckon? Like... But let's see. Terrifying.
As an offer. Okay, right. Instead of a tape of them committing a horrible murder...
It's a burnt DVD.
It's a burnt DVD of them doing a really good... best man speech at a wedding they have no memory of attending. See?
Yeah.
Is that anything?
I mean, I think that there is something interesting.
It's videotapes of them performing stand-up and killing, right? But they have no memory of ever doing these performances. It's still got a little... It's still slightly sinister.
Yeah. I mean, it's like... Yeah, because so you... It's like videotape from behind... And so somebody's doing a comedy set, and it's just a tape that appears in their in their like mailbox.
Yeah, great. Right?
And then the set goes really well, and then they turn to the camera.
So it's not a well shot set, then. The fact that you're only seeing them from behind, whoever was filming it, really dropped the ball.
I mean, I think it's useful if you're a stand up to get those kind of reactions on tape.
Mm.
But then to see the sinister smile and be like, that's like being freaked out that it's you.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a story in it. Like, I mean, essentially, as soon as you see that and this, you realize this person doesn't know what it was, you've got yourself a full story as they've like a beginning and an end.
Yeah. It's a real sort of werewolf kind of thing. They have this thing where in the night they go out and they kill and they kill again, but they're killing on stage at the Comics Lounge and waking up, and
I was picturing
they
spleen
can
bar.
Smell the club on them, and There's scraps of notes written all around new gear. Maybe they've been possessed by the spirit of a dead comedian in some way, who a restless spirit that still wants to perform. Would it be worse,
yeah,
okay, if the performances they're doing are really bad, right? So they're going out and they're bombing in their sleep.
I mean,
at like open mics, and they're a real like, and they're watching the stuff, and a lot of it's really not okay, right? That's part of what's so horrifying to them about it, is that it's like, it's crook gear.
Yeah, I mean, it's
and they're stealing
jokes.
Doing
well for some reason is doing well seems to me almost more terrifying, because then you would like, you know, if you did poorly, you would be like, I guess my brain blocked it out. But then why is my brain...
And I guess I wasn't fully conscious, so it would make sense that I wasn't good at doing stand-up.
Yeah. And then maybe finding, like, another video online somehow would be, like, even more terrifying. Because you're like, wait, so this is a different one, and I did do this for a while?
Yeah. Maybe you're getting better. But I think there's also another thing, which is, like... Maybe a documentary on the scene. Oh, no, I guess this is kind of... Are we just inventing Jack Druce's bit about the guy covered in blood who wakes up on stage? He's covered in blood and he doesn't know how he got there? Sort of the opposite of that, isn't it?
No, I think this is the opposite.
Yeah, thank God.
This is the opposite of that.
But a stand-up documentary about, you know, sort of Jerry Seinfeld's comedian style... It's about this guy, and he's a sleepwalker and a sleep talker, right? And he's just some regular guy who falls asleep in New York City, and then his body gets up and he walks the streets and he goes and signs up for open mic nights, and he performs on stage, eyes closed, completely like unconscious, he's a sleep performer. He does pretty well.
Yeah.
And then
I think that this is
other comedians talking about him.
For me, I think that that's like an avenue that somebody would think is the solution. But I don't find it satisfying as for the story that would actually be what happened.
Sure.
You know,
great.
Great. Yeah, I want something more strange. Just the idea that you're not living entirely your life, or how you would forget part of your life, that is more unsettling. Yeah. And maybe imagine if you if you did shift in the, this is not, I don't think the interesting solution, but if you did shift dimensions, you went into a new universe, a new kind of, you know, timeline or whatever, but you didn't know. And there was no noticeable reason. There was no event or anything like that. That somehow
just you saying that has like scared me a little bit of like the possibility of that happening.
Like, is
there just... I just got a little thrill of like, oh my God, what if that happened to me? And I was looking after my kids and I didn't realize that they weren't really my kids.
Well, I still think that they would be enough your kids.
But maybe not. What if they're not? But they're not, though, right? Like, if I'm in a different dimension, and then they're not my children.
But they are still from your DNA, which would be basically the same, right? Because if they exist, they can those children can only exist from a union between you and your beloved.
Yeah, but there's something about that bond that wouldn't be the same. I haven't raised them. We haven't grown together in that same way.
But there would be, you would have raised the other ones that are almost identical.
Yes.
and then the other person, so I think it wouldn't, I mean, I think that there is something there's some unsettling weird difference there, but I reckon in the grand scheme of things it would be negligible to in the difference to your life, other than like
I think it's something that could send somebody completely insane, and I think we've invented a new kind of mental illness, which I think is exciting.
I love
a new kind of delusion.
Yeah.
Derangement.
Yeah, like that time that I thought I had a metal wire somewhere in my gums. Remember that?
No, but that's not nice at all. That sounds like full-on drug psychosis.
Yeah, one time I was like waiting to go into a gig, and I was sitting in my car, and I could feel in the back of my mouth a really sharp little thing just kind of like sticking out of my gums. And I was like, what the fuck was that? Like that, and I was touching it with my tongue. And then I would kind of like try to get my thumb in there to try to feel where it was, and I couldn't feel it. And then and then at some point I kind of found it, and then I start to pull on it, and it just felt, I didn't know what it was, but it felt like it was like pulling from like deep within my like gum structure, like up in like attached to the bone or something. And so straight away I was like, it just felt like an invasion of the body snatchers thing. Something that had entered my body and was starting to like replace me with wiring or whatever. Like that. Of course, that's where my mind went to first.
Yeah. Right?
And then at some point, I just felt again, and it was gone, and I never found this hard piece of like thing again. And I was
genuinely, you were pulling on something, and there was something there.
There was something there, and it was like deeply ingrained. It might have been like a fish bone or something like that. I don't know.
That's awful. That's really horrible.
But I was like, oh, it's the aliens that have invaded my body that are starting to take control. And then it just disappeared, and I was like, oh. Well, maybe there's a sci-fi story in it one day. Andy,
we're going to start doing sci-fi Try Guys again.
Yeah,
on the Patreon, it's going to happen.
We got a little nudge from Adriana Genualdi, and we're genuinely excited.
Thankful.
We're genuinely excited about trying to do it some more back on the sci-fis, back on the Try Guys. Although since that group that were very popular called Try Guys, do you think it should become Sci-Fi Attempt Boys?
Yeah, okay. Reboot. Yeah.
Okay, wait. Andy, I think Alistair, we probably have enough sketch ideas here.
We should go to Words from a Listener.
Okay, Words from a Listener. Which listener should we do today? Do you think Casey Pearson?
Oh, it'd be good if I had to guess the listener.
Which listener? Okay, Andy, you try and guess.
Casey Pearson?
Yes, you got that run. You got that run right.
Feels good. I actually did feel good.
You know what would be really cool? If you did have, let's say you were guessing and you said like Ron Jabrassi or something like that. And I could say, oh, that's right. You got that run right.
Imagine that.
That run. Oh, well. You got that run right. You got that run right. No, got that wrong, right? That would work if you also work as an answer. If you had just said, let's say, Casey Pearson, and it was Casey Pearson, but I was played by Scooby-Doo, and he would say, you got that wrong, right?
All right.
So now Casey has sent in three words from a listener, and I believe it's Casey. So what do you think the first word is?
Okay, the first word is lagerphone. Lagerphone.
Oh, very close. It's right. Right.
Right. R-I-G-H-T.
No. No, no, no.
W-R-I-T-E.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Right. Some. Second word, some.
Oh. No, not at all. No, the second word is play.
Right, play. And third way is a word is glove.
Right, play, glove?
Yeah.
No.
Thought it could be some sort of eat, pray, love kind of
Oh,
pun.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Reet, play, glove. No, I'm sorry. The third word is right.
Right, play, right. And is the third word R-I-G-H-T?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. But is it playwright? P-L... Did you bring this up recently?
Yes,
How is playwright spelt? Is it P-L-A-Y-W-R-I-G-H-T?
Yeah, it's really F-U-R.
Yeah.
F-U-C-K-E-D.
Is it? It sounds like they spelled it wrong.
Yeah,
R O N G. So it's right as in like a shipwright, somebody who builds ships, yes. Somebody who builds plays.
Yes, that's what it is. Right comes from the act of making.
Mm.
Yeah, so, and so, but in this case, we're using two wrong rights.
To make right play. Mm. Right.
Now, two rights, what do they make?
Oh, an airplane. The first airplane.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Two rights make a plane.
Two wrongs.
Are you going to say something, Andy? Right. This is like the lamest response to an already lame response.
Yeah, great.
Well, two wrongs don't make a right. Well, two rights do make a plane.
Now, why would you say that? Because I was about to say that. And why would you say that's the lamest response?
No. I mean, what? In terms of like. In terms of in an actual conversation
yeah.
where people are are trading sayings.
All right, what about this? Would this be lamer? Oh, I just peed my pants. Would that be lamer?
I don't know. I actually like that more.
Oh, just did a wee-wee.
I did a wee-wee in my poo-poo hole.
Oh, that's no.
Pushed their penis into their own anus. And then peed, and then said, "Oh, I did a wee-wee in my poo-poo hole."
Oh, who are they saying this to? The president?
Their mom. Yeah, the president.
I mean, once upon a time, once upon a time, that would have had more cachet. But I feel like the office of the President of the United States of America has been diminished. And the act of putting your penis into your bum, peeing into your own bum and saying, "Oh, I did a pee-pee in my poo-poo hole," to the President doesn't have that something that it once had. It's not as transgressive.
I mean, I think
Donald Trump has devalued the presidency to such a point where somebody doing that is no longer considered embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like the idea. It's an artist talking about this photograph of them in the Oval Office with the president, and the president is laughing. And you're looking sad, and you've just got a wet patch on your pants.
In the back of your pants.
Yeah, and you go, and this is when the time I said to the president, "Oh, I did a wee-wee in my poo-poo hole."
Do you think that if, but this is the situation, right? Yeah. You're going to meet the president, right?
So you push your penis
suddenly,
into your own
anus. You suddenly really need to pee, right? Your bladder is really full, but it's a fact you just did a big poo, so your bowel is completely empty, right? Fortunately, you've got a long penis, and you in this emergency scenario where there's no other options, the Secret Service is there. They say this is your chance to meet the president, right? You you push your penis into your bum and you pee into your own bum.
Slide your hand down your pants.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you're like, "Oh my god, I gotta save this from going wrong."
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You're standing alone in there, and you start to pee, right, into like that.
You relax, and there's a look of relaxation on your face. You're like, "It's working. Like thank God, I got out of this potentially nightmare scenario."
Yeah, yeah. And then the door opens, and the shock of the president walking in makes you shit yourself. At the moment, you're shitting shitting piss.
Oh no. The camera, are the cameras all there?
Yeah, the cameras are all there.
Yeah, great. Okay, and then you say
when the cameras
the line.
Were there when you were pushing your penis into your own bum hole as well, but you turned to the wall to do it in a kind of, a way with a bit of a debonair, you know,
great. Yeah.
And
a bit of class, a bit of class. Dignity.
Yeah, and then for some reason, I'm picturing that the president is Obama.
I think for this to be a truly satirical sketch, and that is my dream. I hope this is finally the thing that restores satire to its rightful place, okay? And finally has some cut through and some impact, as satire has failed to do in recent years, possibly ever. It's Donald Trump, right? And you doing this, it all being caught on camera, barely makes the news, right? It's not even the most outrageous thing that happened in the Trump White House that day. And that's what makes it satirical, the fact that, the, as I say, the office of the presidency has been so diminished by Trump's candidacy and leadership that much as he said he could shoot a man in the middle of the street and he wouldn't lose any votes, now you can piss into your own bumhole on camera in front of the president and not lose any dignity.
Yeah, I'm happy to go with that.
No, but Alistair, I know it's, you're not going to find it satisfying. So I'm happy to go with your one as well. It can be Obama. What about this? Yeah. What if there's a maybe we can all win here. Maybe there is an official agency of the government, right?
Yeah.
That measures the dignity of the officer. And it's their responsibility to measure the dignity.
We can all win.
Just let me finish.
It's Obama wearing a Trump suit. Wearing a Trump mask, and he's wearing a Trump.
Oh, that is good.
Okay, so you do yours.
Maybe that's what clown makeup is. It's somebody dressed up as Donald Trump.
Yeah.
We got it. We got it. Now, satire is back, baby.
Yeah.
There's an office of the US government whose job it is to monitor and give updates and measure the dignity of the office of president. And as such, there's somebody whose role it is to, on camera, pee into their own bum hole and say, I did a pee-pee in my poo-poo hole, in front of the president, in front of every president, maybe every month. They do this every month. And by monitoring how much dignity the person loses in doing this, mm-hmm. that is their way of, much like, you know, the price of a Mars bar is used as a measure of inflation.
Sure.
This is used as a measure of the dignity of the office of president.
Or like how you would, like, you know, set off explosives underground to, you know,
to try and do seismic measurements and learn about the structure of the earth.
Find out about the density of about a bit of land and things like that. Yeah. This is seismic dignity testing.
And this is from the Right Play Right prompt.
And I'll just write down saying, I did a pee-pee in my poo-poo hole.
Oh, thank you for listening, everybody, to Two in the Think Tank.
I mean, season You're five welcome. Is off to a fucking rip. It's an absolute rip snorter.
Oh, mate, this snort has been thoroughly ripped.
The interesting thing
is that this
I can't
snort a new one.
Someone doing this in front of like the Australian Prime Minister.
It's got no, it doesn't mean anything. It has no meaning.
Yeah. But I could picture maybe it happening in front of Xi Jinping and him not resisting, you know, like not showing any emotion as like his goons take the person away.
What about doing it in front of Putin?
Yeah, that's
kind of fun to me. Yeah, I would kind of like that.
I think it's fun again. It's almost like a Steve-O prank. You know?
Yeah. If we could get Steve-O to do that in front of Putin, that could help.
I think it could help. I think it could help get him reelected.
Oh, Putin?
Yeah.
Do you think imagine. it's a fun idea.
Yeah. Do you think that would help his chances?
His chances, yeah. He could really have this thing in the bag. In the big bag of ballots that he writes himself and gives to the bloody ballot counters.
Big bag theory.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Go on. Yeah, the universe came out of a big bag.
We're seeing evidence of the bag.
We could get this off the ground.
Maybe we could genuinely get it off the ground. But anyway, but while this isn't off the ground, let's wrap up the episode by going through the sketch ideas. What do you say?
Yeah, I'd love that.
And a big thank you to Casey Pearson for your beautiful words and the beautiful sketch idea that it inspired. And so today's sketches is car in the house for hitting you to take your shoes off. It's the domestic. Then we've got a sport where it's bullfighting, but with a car. It's also got the idea of the sparring the car in the gym. This is, you know, it's
sparring car.
And that's where you would practice, of course.
Yeah.
As I imagine, they practice somebody. When a bullfighter practices, he has a friend dress up as a bull and chase him around.
Stabs them to death.
Yeah. Then we have the limited mobility library. then we have house feet for people to put their shoes into to walk inside.
You know what would be great is we should invent a type of knife, right?
Mm.
Where instead of so it has a knife handle, but instead of a blade, it has a sort of a big round rubber nub. Okay, it's quite broad. Mm. Okay, and what it is so if you see somebody choking or in need of CPR, you can run over and administer CPR using this rubber knife pad, and it'll be like you're stabbing them to life.
Ah, yes. Like a medical knife for helping people.
Yeah.
Well, that's, yeah, because did we discuss this about how, like,
I think we have had something about stabbing.
Surgery is controlled stabbing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that might have been right. A 400th episode thing, or it might be.
Domesticated stabbing.
Mm. We adopted a stab.
We domesticated the knife, and we were able to use it. Much like the Deadly Nightshade family, we were able to... Anyway, sorry, I'll
knife
stop.
Shade? Is that what you said?
Deadly Knife Shade. That's right.
Do you know that whole thing with, like, you know, people saying, like, tomatoes and all that, they're all the nightshades. They're the deadly nightshades. It all just comes from one of their relatives being a poisonous plant called the Deadly Nightshade?
Yeah.
There you go. Then we have... real mathematic operators that combine you and maybe subtract you. Then we have the accounting origins of clown outfits. Then we have the terrifying VHS of murder or stand-up set, and it turns out to be you.
It was you all along.
Then we have saying I did a pee-pee in my poo-poo hole to the president.
What a way to finish.
By just as I was saying those words. So, very exciting for how that's going to damage my relationship.
That is exciting.
Anyway.
Saying I did a pee-pee in my poo-poo hole in front of the president in front of my beloved. Hello, I mean goodbye. Thank you very much for listening.
For tuning in. This is from the Think Tank. Oh, I'm Andy. Well, you know, feel free to listen to more episodes.
We should release an episode. There should be a podcasting platform, right, where you can make GIF podcasts where we'll structure it in such a way that it is impossible to tell where the podcast begins and ends. We'll make an Ouroboros podcast. We'll call it the Ouroborobcast, right? And it's got its own sort of audio format where it loops infinitely, and the last idea that we come up with is the one that inspires the first idea that we come up with. It's basically Teleport, but it's a podcast.
Oh. I'm interested,
but
I can't figure out quite what you mean. So it's like, but
there's no time, and I don't, and you shouldn't give a fuck, Alistair. I got to let you go,
Andy. You can't pique my interest, and then you know you're gonna give me blue brain. all right, thank you very much for listening. It's great to be back doing regular episodes. I'm probably on a mountain somewhere,
Excruciating pain,
in excruciating
agony.
Pain. Take care, everyone, and we love
you.
Thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince.
I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.